Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You have reached Bob Nallen Live. Thank you for being here today. Boy, it is already November the 11th, 2012. It's 11-11-12 today. And it just seems like the weeks continue to go by quicker and quicker. It just seems like yesterday we were together. Glad to be with you today. If this is your first time on the Freedomizer Radio Network, welcome. Glad you are here. We, of course, come together every Sunday at this time to alert, to awaken, to do battle against the New World Order and the plan that they have to overthrow humanity and institute an awful, terrible tyranny in this land. Well, I'm excited to be here, as always. And again, I'm glad that you're here with me. Our call-in number is area code 347-324-3704. Let me give that to you one more time. 347-324-3704. Well, today, or tomorrow, I guess, the country will be celebrating Veterans Day. And I wanted to read something to you today before we got started with our show today. And basically, what I have written out is the following. This Veterans Day, my thoughts are with the innocent victims imprisoned in Abu Ghraib and at the Cuban concentration camp at Guantanamo. My thoughts are with those innocent Iraqis exposed to white phosphorus and depleted uranium. My thoughts are with those in Libya that have been carpet bombed by NATO. My thoughts are with those innocent people killed in Pakistan and Yemen who are victims of these imperial drone bombings by the United States. Last but not least, my thoughts this Veterans Day are with those in Gaza and the West Bank. That is a summary of what I think about on Veterans Day. And so you may think and have in mind something totally different, but those are my thoughts. And I think I have a great show lined up for you today. I have as my guest today Dennis Spain and Natalie Marino, and if you do not know who those people are, you will by the end of the show. Dennis and Natalie have worked together on a book, actually a graphic novel, called The Mind of God. And I highly recommend it. It is something worthwhile reading, and we're going to talk to Dennis and Natalie this hour and a half about their book, about what's in the book, and other topics, whatever come to mind. Again, I know that they will be willing to take questions. If you have a question, again, the number 347-324-3704. Well, let me go ahead and bring Dennis on. I know that he is holding, and we can go ahead and kind of get started. We'll wait for Natalie to dial in. Dennis, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, Dennis. Sir. This is Rob Nallen. You're on Rob Nallen Live. Are you there today?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. How is Hawaii?
Hawaii, we have a very, very beautiful day today. I mean, it's exceptionally beautiful. And maybe about 75, I'm at the 2,500-foot level at the base of Mauna Kea. And it's just an exceptionally beautiful day today. Nice trades are blowing.
I'm jealous, Dennis. I'm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and today we have clouds. It's overcast. It's going to turn really cool. So I'm jealous that you're living in paradise.
Well, thank you. I ended up here haphazardly. Trust me. I didn't even know there was more than one island. That's how little I thought of Hawaii. I grew up in the Midwest, so for most of my life. Well, for the first 34 years of my life, and it never occurred to me I'd move to Hawaii, to tell you the truth. And I have to tell you, Rob, unfortunately, Natalie, who is still recovering from the effects of Hurricane Sandy and the nor'easter, and so she won't be able to join us today, maybe some other time. I really apologize to your listeners, but it's a mess still out there, and people are still hurting, so.
Okay, well, that's okay. We can have her on, like you said, another time. That would be great. Well, Dennis, before we really get into the book and what the graphic novel is about and so forth, why don't you give my listeners a little background about your background and then, I guess, the events leading you up to writing this graphic novel?
Okay, great. Actually, I'm an acupuncturist and herbalist in Chinese medicine here on the Big Island. And I also, when I was in college, I got a degree in mathematics. So I also tutor private students. I'm at a position in my career where I can pick and choose my students, and that's always very enjoyable. I really, have been, I like to tell people that before 2011 or 2001, when I saw the Twin Towers collapse, I was basically a very intelligent sheep. And, when those Twin Towers came down, something happened dramatically in me. I just felt that I had been hoodwinked. I had not really looked closely enough at the politics and the economics that were determining our world. And so I began, at that point, I began a 10-year study on my own, nothing formal, but on my own, using primarily the internet to just expose myself to different points of view. Before that time, I was really apolitical. And at this point, I'm also apolitical, but from a different perspective. And in those 10 years, I really came to see that our country, our beautiful, beautiful country, is off course. And that affects me deeply, because this is such a great nation. This is the potential of this nation to be a beacon, a light unto the world, is unbelievable. And yet we've adopted a stance that has destroyed our credibility in the eyes of most of the world, in my opinion. Anyway, about 5 or 6 years ago, I went to a meditation retreat here on the Big Island, and the topic of the retreat was the poetry of Jalaluddin Rumi. And I had heard of Rumi, I think, before, but I really hadn't paid much attention. And I was so moved by some of the poetry that was recited in this workshop, poetry that has been rendered by Coleman Barks and Deepak Chopra and some other people. I was so moved by this poetry that I went on a walking meditation, and for some reason, and not mystical, I'm sure, but for some reason, a plot started to form in my mind for a screenplay. And for the next 4 or 5 months after work, I would just sit at the computer and just blow out of me whatever came. And I got a lot of editing help from people in the theater community here and some directors. And I put it into finished form. It's been revised many, many times. Anybody who writes knows you have to revise and revise and revise, unless you're a bloody genius. But So that came into, over the next year or so, it came into form, and I was getting no traction at all, and no one was interested in the screenplay. It's kind of a, to my point of view, it's kind of controversial. So I, at that point, I thought, well, maybe I'll just do a graphic novel. Maybe that way I can get some interest in it. And having no idea, you know, the amount of work it would take to do this graphic novel, I just put out a call for help or a hiring call to someone, some artist on guru.com. And Natalie is an award-winning artist on the East Coast, Natalie Marino. And she answered. She was the first person who answered. There were quite a few people who responded. But I knew immediately from working at her imagery that this person could really carry this off. I had no idea it would be as difficult as it was, because I turns out I'm a rather perfectionistic editor. And there are about 837 images in this graphic novel, beautiful images, but each one has been revised 5 to 10 times. Natalie and I did this process over Skype. You know, she had a full family life. I had my practice and my business here. We found time to do it over Skype. And it took us, it took us 4 years. I can't believe it. We stuck to it. But she did, especially. I was only had funds to pay her for the first year, but she graciously donated her all her time and effort for the next 2 years following that. Okay, so I don't know where that leads us, but something about me and the novel.
we were just talking about the events leading up to you writing the graphic novel.
Yeah, you know, I've been so really, not, I wouldn't say traumatized, but so fixated on the image of those buildings collapsing, the Twin Towers, that, you know, it did shake me to my foundations, my philosophical foundations, my economic foundations, my political foundations. And I just wanted to look at the world differently, because I started to see that, you know, we can only act on the information we are being fed. And if you're being fed false information, my God, you can rile people up into all kinds of atrocities and barbarities. You know, and I feel that that's what has happened. I know that there's probably a lot of good-intentioned military people out there. I mean, maybe there is even that rare good-intentioned politician, such as Ron Paul, for example. But for the most part, I think these people are marching lockstep to something behind the scenes that I've come to see, and I've come to call the puppet masters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it as necessarily a conscious conspiracy, but I see it as a mechanism of conspiracy. That has the world in its thrall at the moment, and especially the United States. I want to pull back our country from, if possible, from its imperial pretensions. But it's going to be very hard, because, you know, we have such faith in government that it's pathetic, in my opinion.
Right. Well, that's true. Can you just give us a little, just give us a synopsis of the plot of the graphic novel?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You can, your listeners can go to, also go to www.mindofgod.info, not .com, but .info, to get further information if they like. But basically, it's a story that takes place, in two time frames. In the 13th century, one story proceeds along the lines in the 13th century, when the Sufi mystic poet Rumi has an encounter with his main, what turns out to be his main spiritual teacher, Shams of Tabriz. And Shams is kind of a rough-hewn character, a monk, a traveling monk. There's a lot of legends about him in the Middle East. But he managed to shake Rumi to his foundations as well. Rumi was a noted theological scholar in Islam, but Shams shook him up in some deep, deep way. Shams opened his heart. And so one storyline tells the story of this encounter and how it changed Rumi, and how it had a rather significant effect on the life of Shams as well. The other storyline takes place in the 21st century, the present day. And it's the story of the war on terror, what I see to be the bogus war on terror. Mm-hmm. And it follows an operative, a Marine Corps operative, who has some connections to a terrorist in the Middle East. And so somehow I managed to tie those two stories together, those two apparently rather different storylines. I've managed to tie them together, come to some conclusion, basically a challenge to the women of the world, and especially a challenge to the Muslim women of the world. And, I don't want to give away the story, but that's essentially the impact of the novel.
Okay. And then how did you arrive at the title of The Mind of God?
That's, you know, there is another book out there written by a physicist. It has a subtitle, Mind of God, something other. But actually, before the plot even came to mind, that was the first, before I even thought of writing the screenplay, that phrase just popped into my mind. And then it's almost like the novel then coalesced or formed around that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the characters uses that phrase at a crucial point in the novel. That explains the title.
Okay. And in the book itself, or in the graphic novel itself, do you quote any direct quotes from Rumi, I guess, is a mystic in some sort? Is that the case?
Yeah. I credit Coleman Barks and some other people, Deepak Chopra, in the very first page, because it was their poetry, the segments of their poetry, that actually prompted this novel. So I hope they will realize my deep indebtedness to them. And on the very first page of the novel, I acknowledge that. So at various places throughout the novel, there will be a quote. You know, that the protagonist of the novel is a young Muslim woman, and she's a musician. So her task, she realizes in life, is to actually put the words of this poetry to music. So in the parts of the novel where we use this poetry, I put quotation marks around it. Of course, it's not my writing there. It's the interpretive rendering of these other translators and women's poetry.
I know my listeners can't see it. You know, I have a copy. I have a copy of the graphic novel. Where did the idea for the cover come? Because up in the left-hand corner of the cover, you have a drawing of a drone over some Middle Eastern city.
Yes, I think that what's happening now, that war on terror is morphing into like a drone warfare, selective assassinations. And this is, a tactic that will not win this war on terror, this so-called war on terror. This is a tactic that will actually inflame the Muslim world. And it will inflame any person who has a sense of justice. You know, you can't willy-nilly, select these targets, not expect to create 10 terrorists for every one you kill. This is the stupidity of this lumbering giant of the state. And I think that, I used an analogy. It didn't go over too well. We were at New York Comic Convention, New York Comic Con, and I used an analogy, analogy that didn't go over so well, but I think it's pretty accurate. You know, it'd be like if 19 guys from Brooklyn came into Manhattan and exploded and killed many, many people, like Twin Towers, for example. So the people of Manhattan got together, and they're naturally very angry and outraged and hurt. So they decide to just raise the borough of Brooklyn. So they go ahead and do that. They destroy Brooklyn, all the people in it. But then they find out that one of the perpetrators has a cousin in the Bronx. So the next thing they do is they go and they destroy the Bronx. And as a result, Now we have a lot of angry people at us. We're not responding in a way that would have really served justice, in my opinion.
Right.
Because all of the response has done is increased our military footprint around the world. It's increased the amount of precious resources that we allocate to war and the machinery of war. And all of this, we come back to my favorite topic of the past 10 years, all of this is made possible by this faux money that we create based on our signing promissory notes. So probably one in 9,900 Americans won't even understand what I'm saying. Before 2011, I had no idea either of how the banking system operated. Mm-hmm. That goes part and parcel with our whole ability to create a welfare warfare state. But I got to tell my dear fellow Americans, it's not going to last. We're being deindustrialized by this very process.
Right.
And you have to really look at it closely.
Right. You know, Dennis, I have in my own sphere of people that I speak with that I've compared this war on terror to westward expansion of the 19th century. In a similar fashion, the America moved west. They ran into native peoples, and in a similar fashion, like the war on terror, the westward expansion was the facilitating apparatus for them for us to begin to exterminate the native people and take land and attempt at the extermination of one of their vital resources, that was the bison. And so, you know, and unfortunately, you know, the people that I speak with really do not want to look at this in the light of westward expansion. Would you agree with me, or?
You know, I really do agree with you. When we talked earlier last week, you know, it's I think you and I are speaking to each other. We're speaking to the choir because,
right.
The human plane. It's a very difficult experience here. You know, the people moving west. You know, they had to have certain attitudes towards the Indian culture. You know, in order for them to expropriate. And we're all on this phenomenal plane. We're all involved in this quest for survival. I don't have an easy solution for that. The same thing is happening in Israel. The Israeli Jews are just pushing the Palestinians into little pockets all over the place. It's like the ghettoization of Palestine. And I understand, you know, it's so tricky. All this violence that was that occurred. I don't have a. You know, the Indian, recently Russell Means, who was what a gentleman, what an individual. He was able to span both the West, the American culture and the Indian culture. And he died recently. Many of your listeners will remember that he played this beautiful part in The Last of the Mohicans. But he exemplified a very expansive point of view. You know, he saw what was happening to his peoples, and he also sees what's happening to the United States, you know, with respect to the federal government. And he said in one of his last statements before he died, he just died a few weeks ago, was that, you know, the American people are going to start to really understand the nature of that federal government, the same federal government that corralled the Indians and slaughtered them. So I do support your analogy. I listened to your introduction today, and my first thought was, you know, you must be some kind of a radical Christian or something. What is your background?
My background I grew up, you know, going to church and my own history is quite unique in its own. You know, I was grew up in the in church, in the Churches of Christ. I went for a time to a Pentecostal seminary, and so you know, I already, because of that, because of where my life has taken me at this point, that idea of questioning what I, you know, have always believed and what I always thought really started there in, at the seminary. And for whatever reason, 2001 came and the Twin Towers came down, and I went ahead and accepted George Bush's version of the events, the Bush administration's version of the events. It was 2003 in the invasion of Iraq, the second invasion, or the invasion. The first one, I guess, was just to push them back out of Kuwait, but this was a full-scale invasion. And started listening to the UN weapons inspectors telling the world that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It was not a haven for terrorists. And at that point, you know, there was kind of like a light bulb that went off. And I began to connect the dots. The other thing that really kind of woke me up, in a sense, is that I, you know, had begun to read where the United States had stolen some of the Iraqi museum treasures, archaeological treasures, also looted gold. And I said, wait a minute, something's not right here. And from that point on, I began to do my own research and my own study, and looked into the Twin Towers fiasco and came to the conclusion that the government was wrong. It was not the way that they said that it happened. When I discovered that airplane fuel could not get hot enough to melt steel beams, then that really sealed it for me. And then I began to look into other things. I began to look into the fact that under Ronald Reagan did sell Saddam Hussein, you know, chemical weaponry to use against the Iranians.
Yeah.
So it all began to fall in line at that point. And then, you know, I was searching for some direction on how to be able to express myself and how of what I was learning. And so then I probably 2010, I guess, 2011, I had this idea for a T-shirt company, and I started a T-shirt company. And so, of course, that's a brief synopsis, but that's generally, you know, my background.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, one of the themes of the graphic novel is around the theme of turning. And I have to explain what I mean by that. It was used by this incredibly scholarly writer. I'm just looking for his name right now. Yeah, because I read this book. James Douglas, and the title of his book is JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. And, you know, I read this book, and what he demonstrates in this book is how JFK turned from being a Cold War warrior to a man who desired peace desperately. And this whole concept of turning applies to, you know, when I turned when I saw the Twin Towers come down, you turned when you saw the second invasion of Iraq. You know, it's very important. This theme of turning is one of the main themes in this graphic novel. It's very important that people, in my opinion, be open to turning,
right,
turning away from the direction in which they're going. And I feel that Ron Paul was offering that opportunity for the American people, but they weren't quite ready for it. We cherish our beliefs so strongly. We feel probably the worst anxiety can be laid upon a human being is to be without belief of any sort. We cling to our beliefs so strongly. But Ron Paul, in his 30 years or so in the House of Representatives, he really attempted to present an alternative point of view. And this concept of turning, as I said, is a very important theme in this graphic novel.
Okay. Well, Dennis, let me just I need to go ahead and take a break, and let's do that, and we'll come up and we'll come back after the break, talk more about a graphic novel and other topics as it relates. If you'd like to ask Dennis a question, you can call 347-324-3704, and he'll be available to field some questions, answer them, and do all that when we come back. You're listening to Rob Nowlan Live on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Be back in just a minute.
We are officially announcing our White Hat versus Black Hat GMO Awareness Video Contest at freedomizerradio.com. Find a fun way to bring public awareness to the issue of GMOs and win $100 in the process. Look for details at freedomizerradio.com and join in the fun while reaching out to others.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait. There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Antiwartees.com is to promote anti-war activism, unlocking minds and shattering paradigms. By purchasing one of these t-shirts, you become an anti-war activist. www.antiwartees.com, bringing peace and human rights to the mainstream. Buy it, wear it, become it. Anti-war tea.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
All right. You're back with Rob Nellen live today on this 11th of November 2012. My guest is Dennis Spain, the author of a graphic novel entitled The Mind of God. Well, Dennis, we left off talking about one of the themes of the graphic novel of turning. I want to get back to the graphic novel itself, if you don't mind. How did you and Natalie kind of work together, being so far away, when you had to approve, you know, artwork? And how did that work?
Yeah, that took us about a month to get that process down. But what we would do is Natalie would make a drawing, and then she would I gave her the screenplay. Then the first thing we did is we just separated out the what each frame would cover in the screenplay. And then she would make a drawing and scan it in, and then she would do her magic. I don't know what she did. She put in different layers of Photoshop and stuff and colors. And then she'd send it to me, and we would Skype every day for about 4 years when some catastrophe or other wasn't happening in her personal life. And so I would just make some suggestions here. Like one of the figures in the book was a priest that influenced me deeply when I was in high school. And so I actually had to advise him how to make him look somewhat similar. So we just go back and forth like that. I would approve certain things. I'd say change this, change that. And she was very good. I mean, if someone at Comic-Con said to me, I was interviewed there, you know, to find an artist who's willing to do this, you know, because they're indie-minded people, essentially. To find an artist who is willing to do this is very unique. Is unique. And I have to agree with that person's assessment, and I really... I put Natalie through a lot of editing because I turns out I'm a little perfectionistic and the problem.
Well, I think to be, you know, whether you're a writer, whether you're, you know, an artist, whatever you are, I think that I think it's innate in people who are, you know, who are creative. You know, when I opened the book for the first time and, you know, I saw the priest, you know, I thought of Dennis Kucinich. I think he looks a little bit like Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion. I hope that doesn't offend you or anything.
No, not at all. Not at all. He does look like a little like Dennis Kucinich. And but he also looks like the priest that I knew in high school who saved my life, really. So, I hope I'm not... stepping on anybody's toes. Likenesses are, you know, coincidental here. But.
Right. Well, let's talk a minute about Comic-Con New York. Did Natalie get to attend that with you?
Oh, yeah, she was instrumental because I live in Hawaii. I had to find in New Jersey, and she basically said she was the one who introduced me to the whole idea, the whole concept. And at first I was a little reluctant because I knew it would stick out like a sore thumb there. I mean, this wasn't a superhero book, and it's actually what I hope is a serious novel and graphic novel format with museum quality images. But, you know, we were like ducks out of water there. You know, it's 150,000 people dressed in all kinds of strange costumes, and, you know, great artists and great lots of, it was a great time. I have to salute the New Yorkers. They were just a really great, you know, when you put 150,000 people in one place, well, of course they're used to it, but I'm from, you know, the rural setting, and they were able to, move about, and I don't think there was one incident in that whole 4 days there that was problematic. I was really impressed with the attitudes of the New Yorkers.
How was the graphic novel received?
Well, I would say it didn't make a big splash at all, right? The truth, because it's so different. People go there to have a lot of fun and, honor their superheroes, I guess. The heroine in my book is, in my opinion, is a true superhero, but, it just wasn't something that would appeal to most of the attendees there. It really wasn't our venue, but I was happy to go, and it, I don't regret it at all. We sold a few books and talked to a few people, made some connections I hope will be fruitful in the future. So.
Did, you know, we talked, and you mentioned the fact that you were working on a movie version of the graphic novel. Can you tell us any more about that?
Well, you know, the purpose of the graphic novel was to attract some attention because, you know, as every potential filmmaker knows, you know, you need money to make a good film. You don't want to make an amateurish one, especially after some of the amateurish films that have appeared recently that have inflamed everybody. I wanted this movie, actually, I want this movie to actually be popular and promote peace. That was the whole purpose of the undertaking to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the movie is on hold until we can get some funding. And I
okay.
have a good a number of people who are, you know, I think that makes lots of good contacts. In that respect, the project has been blessed all along. But we just finished the graphic novel about a month ago, so
okay.
I'm trying to promote it now a little bit to recoup some of our expenses.
Right.
It's really expensive to print this. This is really high-quality printing on excellent paper, so it's just different. It's a genre-breaking graphic novel is the way I like it.
Well, I would agree. I make the observation, I've made this observation to friends of mine who don't always agree with the statements that I make, but we live in a Judeo-Christian society dominated by social Darwinism and consumerism. And
I would agree with that.
We have, there is a tension inside the society that while we, you know, believe in our own conceptions of God and, you know, whatever those may be, those conceptions, at least what I have found, really do not reach too far beyond ourselves. And so when you're attempting to promote the humanity's value, regardless of skin color, ethnicity, religious makeup, that message somehow gets lost. You know, in my view, we have this idea that these unalienable rights discussed in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights are only for those that live here, and that's not really the message that the founders wanted to communicate, that these rights are for all humanity, regardless of whether of who they are and regardless whether or not that they wish to exercise those rights or not. And so I think what your book is doing, or what your book does, I think what my T-shirts do, is try to change this message where it's just not, these rights are not American people rights, they belong to all of humanity. And I think, in my own opinion, this citizenry cannot really grasp that.
You might be right. There's, you know, we are herd animals, so when we get hurt, we circle the wagons and see ourselves in terms of us versus them. And I agree wholeheartedly with your assessment. The Constitution is, in my opinion, is one of the most beautiful documents ever written, ever penned by man. And it's too bad our leaders don't actually read it.
Right.
So
right.
I think it does. I think the statement, you know, the concept of limited government, the support for the rights of the individual, you know, that was kind of like a new, a new twist to the theme of government and politics when it was, you know, enunciated in 1789. And, there have been other places, you know, that had, you know, that document didn't just jump out of the ether.
Right.
In fact, Russell Means' main point in his last one of his last interviews was that, you know, the Constitution owes a great deal to the whole concept of the Iroquois Confederacy and the six or seven nations of the Iroquois peoples that came to similar conclusions, you know. I don't really have firsthand knowledge of that, but I trust Russell Means' assessment. And I know other people said that a lot of the ideas in the Constitution were taken from the Iroquois Confederacy. So
well,
I guess I agree.
You know, I guess, again, at least my message is that, you know, all humanity is valuable. And, you know, if it, for example, wasn't for the Arabs, the Islamics, I don't think we would have the knowledge of mathematics that we have today. They were able to preserve mathematics from, you know, ancient times. And so, you know, regardless of their contribution, they are human beings, and so that's what makes them value. Their humanity makes them valuable. And they have a right to, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, just as the rest of us do. And
yeah.
Killing them, slaughtering them,
yeah,
is immoral.
That's exactly a good solution. Yeah, immoral. And it's you know, in the end, I agree wholeheartedly with you, but in the end, it's basically stupid. You know, it because it breeds constant war, and I guess that's what the state loves in some way. God, people just love to, you know, of course they don't want to be on the front lines. It's somebody else's kid that gets to be on the front lines, but you know, it's just like this war fervor is just unbelievable, you know.
Exactly. You mentioned the fact that you modeled the priest of the book off from the priest that you knew in your childhood. Without giving too much away of the book and so forth, how are those two, how is the character similar to that of the man?
What a great question, actually. You know, at that time in my life, I was in deep turmoil. You know, of course, we all go through adolescent turmoil, but really deep turmoil in my case. And I really don't think I would have survived psychologically without the counseling of this priest. And he, so the priest in the story has this, you know, it's like there are certain Catholic priests that are really, you know, they're beyond Catholicism. You know, I've been reading a little bit on, for example, Teilhard de Chardin, a Jesuit priest who was a paleontologist and an archaeologist. He died in, I think, 1957 sometime on this. But, you know, there's some Catholic priests that I found that are really expansive. And this priest that I knew in high school was one such priest. And if he's listening now, I think he might be still alive. I honor him. I try to honor him in this book because he represents the all-inclusive principle, you know, the intelligent, feeling man who is willing to take a larger viewpoint and is willing to counsel others and go against the grain, go against the herd, you know. And the qualities of intelligence and compassion were very much evident in this priest who advised me. It's interesting to me that after all these years, he was one of the first characters that appears in the book. He's the first character that appears in the book. So I think that's a testament to my unconscious awareness that he was seminal in my life, in my thinking.
Well, Am I a boring
guest here?
I'm sorry?
Am I a boring guest here? I sense you maybe have trouble not knowing what to ask next or something.
Oh, no, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's all right. I just, never mind. Go ahead. Ask another question, please.
Well, I was just going to ask if the other characters in the book, were they based upon other people that you knew throughout your life?
You know, another very good question. Yeah, the heroine, I guess, is I would say she, in terms of Jungian psychology, she's probably my anima. And the other characters, yeah, they're based on what I call, archetypes. I don't know much about Jungian psychology, but I know a little bit. And, you know, there is the archetypal warrior, for example. You don't see too many of those in the present militaries of the world, including the U.S. military, because they've been hijacked by governments that are run basically by psychopaths. But there are, you know, archetypal warriors in our armed forces. I wish they would stand up and call a halt to this nonsense. You know, there are those people who know from their earliest childhood that they are meant to defend hearth and home. It's just that's their kulyana, as they say in Hawaiian, their responsibility. It's just part and parcel of who they are. But it just seems like the militaries of the world have just been conscripted by what I call the puppet masters, for lack of a better term. And I can't think of any military, really, that I could support at this time in our human history.
Well,
certainly those militaries that stay home within their borders, that'd be the first ones I'd support. But,
right.
I think that some people, at Comic-Con, one person thought that I was being anti, or on Facebook, I'm always getting flack from military people that I'm anti-military. I'm not anti-military. I'm not anti anything. I'm for the true expression of archetypes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the archetype of the statesman. I was so wholeheartedly supported Ron Paul, you know. It's kind of off topic, but it's interesting. You know, I very few people in politics that I can't even listen to them. I couldn't listen to the debate at all. You know, it just made my skin crawl because there's just so much, I can't use the real word probably, has to do with BS, basically. My BS meter was pegged almost all the time when I listened to these debates because it didn't seem like they were really addressing the fundamental issues. And Ron Paul kept coming back to some very fundamental issues. And there's some other people, like you mentioned Dennis Kucinich, totally different than Ron Paul, but he doesn't peg my BS meter either. Or this Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont. I could listen to these guys forever. I don't agree with a lot of what, I'm not really socialist at all, but I can listen to these guys because I know that they are intelligent people, really idealistic people, really trying to make the world a better place. Most of these other guys, I think they run on automatic, and it's you just can't listen to them.
Right. Well, just to let you know, I voted for Gary Johnson. And,
well, I did too.
That's who I cast my vote for.
I left most of my the openings blank, though. I mean, because if you enter into politics, if you really want to be a statesman, you really have got to go back to our founding documents. And you really got to read them and understand their intent. And you also have to really have an understanding of economics, which I don't believe hardly anybody does. And before 9/11, I had no understanding whatsoever. It's just through my readings in the Austrian School of Economics that I even have an inkling of knowledge about what's going on. But that school is gaining in prominence. But, you know, it's still not the mainstream. You got these guys coming out of the Ivy Ivy League colleges going into government, and you know they're totally they can't wait to get their hands on the economy.
Right.
You know, it's ridiculous.
Right.
And then and maybe we have time to discuss my views on money. That's another topic.
Okay, great. We can certainly do that. Let me go back to the book real quick. So you would
sure.
So the heroine in your graphic novel, then you would say that she is the archetype for peace, then?
Yeah, she's the archetype. You know, Russell Means, I keep coming back to him because in his last interview, I learned his last interview, he's touched on so many important topics. One of the things he touched upon was the fact that the world now is in the throes or in a stranglehold of a patriarchy. And Russell Means says that was not really the Native American way. And he really promoted a matriarchy and the ideals and the archetype of the feminine, the nurturing, loving, all-including, peacemaking feminine. And, I see a lot of women in politics. More women are entering politics today, but I think most of them are just somehow male versions of themselves. You know, it's like, Hillary Clinton, for example. I mean, and admittedly, this is a very subjective point of view, but, you have to really be in touch with your feeling side to be a good statesman. And if you're just all nuts and bolts politics and moving pawns around in the chessboard, that's missing the whole point.
Right. I agree. Well, let's do this. We have a caller, and let's go ahead and take this caller, and then we're coming up at the top of the hour, and we'll take another break and spend the last half hour of the show with Dennis discussing some other topics. So let's go ahead and take our caller, a question from our caller. Caller, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I lived in Honolulu for quite a few years, and on the island of Oahu. I've been to the Big Islands, though, and by the way, I just love that you're talking about archetypes because it's most people assume whenever you use the word psychology that it must be based on a Freudian model, and they're very different, as I'm sure you know. You know, the Freudian model has to have this cause-effect, which is this sort of polarized view, whereas archetypal Jungian psychology is very much more like, I think, Chinese medicine. Confusing to me when I... But here's a question. Have you seen the collection of art in the Honolulu Museum of Art, which is on Oahu? Have you seen that, the collection of... I don't know what to call it at this point. I feel so stupid. Because of politics, I used to know. It's like, do we call it Arabic or Islamic it's from around that time period, and it's one of the largest collections. Have you seen that? Have you gone to the Honolulu Museum of Art?
I'm sorry to say that I haven't. I will.
Yeah, whose collection it is once again, I'm going to forget her last name. I don't have access to the internet right now, but it was either Dorothy Dandridge or Dorothy Day. Somebody like this. She was a single woman millionaire. Actually, her home is still there in Kahala. And she had some, all I can remember is, really, don't quote me on this, but it was like, some very interesting relationships, but also there was some sort of a scandal done by the press, and very few people know about this. But anyway, that's her collection there. And when I first went there, I was just, I was a teenager, really, and sort of all of the things that part of the world considered to be sacred, as other religions do as well, but we don't know about them as much. It was all together. It was mathematics, art, dance, music.
Are you on Facebook, by any chance?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Why don't you friend me? Befriend me, and then we can you can explain that link more, or if you find it again, the name of that art collection, I'd be very interested in.
Yeah, you would. It's really wild. What I'm saying is, I went there as a New Yorker girl, and then inundated by sort of what happens in Hawaii in the mid-70s, which is, I think still there are more Asians and Buddhists statistically that live there, but I think they're not including the military. So anyway, which is huge. But I remember walking into that part of the museum, and I was initially very disappointed because I had come from New York City, and I was interested in art. But when I sat in that room, not knowing anything about politics or anything, I just loved it. It's that indigo-colored blue, and it's later on you learn, it's, of course, it's related to mathematics. It's these patterns, these intricate patterns.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're saying. Like, there's people. It's like Jeff. Oh, here's what I wanted to just mention that I got from you talking. I'm so glad you're here and you've done this interesting book. And is that oh man, now I'm forgetting. I forget. Okay, never mind.
It's okay, honey. It's all right.
I'll tell you on regular. I'll tell you on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm Dennis Spain, S-P-A-I-N. Just befriend me on Facebook.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling in today. Dennis, let's go ahead and take our break, and then we'll be back and finish up the half hour together. Okay?
Sure.
All right. Thank you. Well, it's Rob Nellen live. You're listening to me on the Freedomizer Radio Network.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea. Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, if you sign up before October 31st, you will get this month free. And another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, solavay.com/freedomizer. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
Hey Freedomizers, Val Villano here. I am proud to announce the premiere of Recharge Radio, my new show right here on Freedomizer. It's Monday through Thursday from 3 to 5 Pacific. Objective journalism rising against the New World Order. Being a New World Order analyst for many years, my expertise on tactics and master plan implementation carried out by the elitists who govern our world, I base my theories on objective probability analysis on both current and past events to bring a new light of understanding in the world in which we live. I believe I have a dynamic news coverage with intel information from insiders in revealing their strategy to the public to help you prepare. Along with my superior guest interviews, I also believe that we will be taking a commanding lead in quality journalism to the airwaves right here on Freedomizer, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Objective journalism rising against the New World Order.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
All right, we are back on Freedomizer Radio. Rob Nellen Live. My guest today has been Dennis Spain. There is still time if you have a question for Dennis about his book or about anything else that might pop to your mind. You're welcome to call 347-324-3704. Again, that's 347-324-3704. Dennis, just another question about the book. When it was all said and done, by the time you had written the text and you'd gotten the artwork from Natalie, how long did that process take from the beginning to the end?
Yeah, it took 4 years almost exactly.
Oh, 4 years almost exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was right. I was just talking to her this morning. We kind of don't know what to do with ourselves now.
Well, did you have other editors that you used to look at the text to make sure that it was correct?
I had a good friend of mine, Lou Dula, on the Big Island here. He was, before we even conceived of making a graphic novel, I showed it to him because he had some experience in the film industry, and he was ruthless. He cut out about 50 pages, you know, just a big red marker. So, I'm very grateful to Lou because he made it a much tighter. I was rambling all over the place, and it's a complicated story because there's a lot of flashbacks, a lot of characters remembering certain events from their point of view, and might be easier to convey in a movie, but we could do our best in a graphic novel format. But I'm very grateful to Lou and Tom Penny here on the Big Island. He's an actor and he's good in set construction. He encouraged me. And then Jane Sibbett, who's my producer at the moment, she did a good job too. She was the first one who I was about giving up on even the possibility of turning this into a movie because it's just not a. It's just not probably the most popular theme right at the moment. But she has been with me for about 3 or 4 years. And, she can now be a little more active now that we've got the model out. But yeah, those three people especially. And, of course, I got feedback from Natalie, too, as we were going along. But, I tell people I'm a one-trick pony. This, I don't know where this came from, this novel. It came out of me, though, and it poured out of me like water. I just want to go back to my little life here in Hawaii, but I have to promote this book because it was, in some way, it was given to me to, it came from a very honest place in me, a desire that a human being should treat each other with Christian values. Although I'm not really, I didn't call myself a Christian so much. I'm not Muslim. I'm not Christian. My main teacher has been this obscure Indian man who's dead now, but his name is Nisargadatta, and Advaita Vedanta, I guess, is really the best description of my spiritual orientation.
Dennis, I often quote, or I've often used the Indian proverb that says that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear, and I'm not quoting that exactly correctly.
No, I think that's pretty accurate, yeah.
That's pretty close.
All I know is about, maybe 15, 20 years ago, I was in a bookstore and this book fell off the shelf, and so I picked it up and that was the I Am That by Nisargadatta. It's a true story, too. I don't know why it fell off the shelf, but it did. And, he's not an easy read. But somehow he's right for me.
What I have determined is that in my own life experience, the teachers are already there. It is just the fact that we have to open our minds and our perspective to listening to those teachers that are already there.
That's so true. That goes back to the concept of turning. You have to be willing to turn, If you're not willing to do that, your life is probably less bumpy and it's probably predetermined. But I'm not sure for some of us that's how we can live. And so, you know, there's teachers all the time. There's teachers right now in everyone's life. My God, I have two, three tremendous teachers right now who are just friends, you know, and they're teaching me things I don't want to learn.
Right.
You know?
Right. And, you know, the teachers, and like you said, you may learn something that you don't want to learn about yourself or about society, whatever the case may be. But they are there, and they are ready. And you know, again, going back to your point of turning, let's talk about that theme a little bit more about this idea of turning. I just thought of a question. Besides the events of September 11th, 2001. Was there another event in connection with that really caused you to turn, or was it just that event solely?
It's strange. Well, you know, it was primarily that event. After it happened, I just started going on the internet for educational purposes, you know. And before that, I didn't do that much internet work, you know. But then I started going and trying to learn about different points of view, and I got this this bug in my bonnet that that all of this 9/11 happened because we're so dependent on oil,
right?
And so I thought, well, gosh, you know, why don't we just, you know, a true memorial for the, you know, this would have been a true memorial for the 9/11 people if we had just put a whole monument, the 2001 Wind Memorial Monument, all down through the Midwestern states, where it's like the Saudi Arabia of wind. You know, that would have been a real monument to the deaths of these innocent people, you know, because it's our insistence on having the reserve currency, the debt-based reserve currency of the world, and also our insistence that the oil be denominated in dollars, that has backed us into a corner, and in fact is in the process of deindustrializing our nation. If any of the listeners really want to get into this topic, I refer them to my good friend. I don't know, he probably doesn't think me a good friend, but I love this guy. His name is Hugo Salinas Price. He's a Mexican billionaire who made his money honestly. And he, as he says in some of his writings, he didn't even want to be a businessman. He's more a philosopher, an economic philosopher, and spiritual philosopher. His name is Hugo Salinas Price, and he writes these incredibly lucid essays. I want to tell you, listeners, if you want to get the equivalent of a PhD in economics without going to Harvard or MIT or all those places, just read two or three of his essays, because you'll have more common sense about economics than most of the people who become the court economists and serve the state in Washington, D.C., Once again, his name is Hugo Salinas Price. His website is www.plata.org. I can't recommend him highly enough. And there's another man that's really, you know, another guy I really like is like a Jeremiah for our age, is Paul Craig Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
And I have Facebook up right now, and his latest essay, Servants and Masters, the Special Interests Won in U.S. Elections Again. And one of my Facebook friends, Daniel Green, he's a free energy and alternative energy entrepreneur. He writes something that goes along with this whole idea of turning. And he writes the phrase, that awkward moment when you realize you are a slave. I love that. That's so true.
Well,
you know,
let me ask you this, Dennis, because
yeah.
I know I had my own aha moment, I guess, like I was telling you in 03. But when you learned that everything that you've been told is basically a lie, how did you process that?
Well, I've been uncovering lies in myself since I was a teenager, so I to me it's the normal state of affairs. You know, some belief I held that's just not quite true, or some distorted belief. I mean, it's just like this listener who called in and talked about Freudian therapy, I've been through that shtick, and, you know, it's like, you know, I'm kind of used to uncovering lacunae in my thinking. And so, it wasn't that big a deal for me. I just realized I had to do something. And so the first thing I did, I had a cockamamie idea that it turns out may not be so cockamamie after all. But it was, you see, we're so dependent on external sources of oil. What we really need is a form of money that's denominated in joules of energy or ergs or, you know, some. And anybody who supplied electricity from renewable sources automatically got these units in their bank account, and that became our new money. So for a while, I was big on this. I wasn't very educated, and there's probably a lot of stupid things about that idea, but it's an interesting idea nonetheless, that we could use actual energy units. The people, you know, anywhere, in other words, we could have banks. Anybody could become a bank to this system simply by plugging in, simply by supplying electricity that's been generated renewably into the grid. Mm-hmm. And they would be given a certain amount of joules in their bank account, and then they could use that and write checks on that or whatever, you know. But, you know, then I got involved in Austrian economics, and the Austrians are very much into archetypes. The archetype of money is gold and silver, because that was the type of money that arose quite naturally, emerged quite naturally in the markets of the river basin civilizations throughout the world, in China and Iraq and so forth. So I became very much interested in seeing. I also started to see that our problems are intimately related to this fraudulent fractional reserve banking system, in which money is solely created since 1913 by people signing promissory notes or swiping credit cards. And then when you pay off these loan contracts, that money is extinguished. And the banking system, it just disappears, just like it appeared out of nowhere. And so people constantly have to go into debt to these bankster-type people. And I often wonder, I wish Jesus was around now, because he'd take a whip to Wall Street and these guys be out in the street, you know, buck naked and being whipped. And I think that he had the right idea. He lost it for the right reason.
Right.
Because the person who controls, we need a standalone money. The people of the world and the people of the United States desperately need a standalone money. And Hugo Salinas Price, by the way, has been pushing this idea in the Mexican culture, because, you know, with his silver libertad coin. And it's really important. If people really understood how money is created, and I maintain not one in 100 people do, they'd be outraged. We have given such power, that our politicians have given such power to this financial elite. It's outrageous. It's immoral.
Well, and I would agree with you. I think the majority of the people that, you know, are living their lives on a daily basis have no idea where, you know, their dollar bills that are in their wallets are the digits in their bank account really come from.
We become serfs. The neo-feudalism.
Yes. Yes, and that's one of my shticks that, you know, I continue to put forth, that we are living in a neo-fascist, neo-feudal police state.
Yeah, well, that's how it's funded.
Right.
Full money. See, that's one of the archetypes. Money is an archetype. There's nothing wrong with money, but you can distort the nature of money, and then it becomes very, very destructive.
Well, of course, you know, using a debt-based paper system, we have, you know, the founders had gone through that in Europe, and, you know, I think that's the reason why they, you know, placed in the Constitution that money was gold and silver, right?
Well, my understanding is that they actually weren't in the business of creating money. They were just in the business of regulating it, which meant to them determining the quantity and fineness of the specie of the silver and gold. So I think it was so obvious to them that what they meant, that you know, you can have private mints. I mean, you can't now. Look at that Bernard von Miltaus. He's facing prison term because he had the audacity just to offer people some honest money, you know.
Right.
But these economists that come out of the Ivy League, they're so they won't turn. They will never turn, because look who butters their bread, you know.
Well, that's why I think we live in a fascist society, because, you know, and I like Gerald Celente's definition of fascism, and that's the merger of state and corporate powers.
Yes. And what makes corporate power so strong is the debt-based money system. They determine how the resources of our society are allocated. So now 55% goes into the machinery of war.
Yeah, and if you watch the debates, Romney and Obama were arguing over how much to increase the military budget.
Yeah, they kind of, you know, it's like, then what kills me is this is going to cause your readers some consternation. You know, everybody goes to IPAC, you know, and it's just the guy, oh my God. You know, I have nothing against the state of Israel other than the fact they're killing the Palestinians, which is enough to say.
Well,
they
I think
realize,
they're illegitimate from the get-go. But,
well, of course they are illegitimate from the get-go, but, you know, that's another topic. They're, you know, right now, they're in existence, but what's really needed is some Martin Luther Kings in both sides of that conflict to step forward and say, two peoples, one destiny. You know, that's the phrase that keeps resonating in my mind. American Jews have to stand up. They don't. You know, that's another example of people not being willing to turn.
Right. Well, and you know, well, you know, my view is that it is not the state of Israel. You know, it is not. You know, Israel was created 3 years after the end of World War II, and it was bombed into existence. And the rightful people of that area are the Palestinians. And, you know, this idea of a two-state solution is, for lack of a better term, not only unrealistic, but it is a bogus solution.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. We're in the minority there, but I have to agree with you, in the United States anyway, I have to agree with you, two peoples, one destiny. It's just like now our relationship to the American Indian. We can't get back the land of the Indians that we took, you know. But, you know, there's a way that we can come to grips. Oh, by the way, I just got to plug this idea, okay? You know, the American Indians, if they want to really, in my opinion, get on their feet, all they have to do is follow the lead of the Free Lakota Bank. Don't stop building casinos. That's one way you can get money from white people, but... you know, from Americans or your fellow Americans. But the other way, the better way is to start offering honest banking. My God, you'd have little monocles all over the place. If people could find, if they could know that their money placed in this bank was going to be there when they, in the form of gold and silver, when they ask for the return of it. So that's a great organization. I haven't done too much research on it, but the Free Lakota Bank. Honest banking.
Oh, I agree.
You know, you can't have a complicated division of labor of society without a banking system, and so you might as well have an honest banking system. That will cause everybody to prosper. You know, not everybody will be equal because we all have different talents and capabilities, but we can all prosper.
Exactly. Dennis, just in the 4 or 5 minutes that we have left, why don't you give us some contact information, give us the website, tell us where
Sure.
we can purchase the graphic novel.
Yeah, just go to the website www.mindofgod.info. Don't put in .com, that goes to another website. Just put in .info, and you'll come up to the website, you'll get a synopsis, and you get some idea of the quality of the imagery and a little bit of the story there. And then you can click on Buy the Book button. that will help me get out of debt here.
And is your contact information, as far as your bio and your background, is there at that site as well, right?
Yes. And I just want to say one other thing. You know, there's been a lot of controversy. This book is not meant to inflame anybody. It's meant to just... you know, there'll be people in Islam who feel, you know, especially the people in Saudi Arabia, perhaps, they won't like it. But, you know, there's no reason for people to be killing each other over their different versions of God. I mean, if you have my version of God, you see how ridiculous that is. Because my version of God is so abstract, it's hard to formulate. But, you know, the people of the world really have to come together around sound religious philosophy of intolerance, around sound economics, around sound politics. Politics is not the solution. It is not the solution, people. And I know that's been the Obama bots are in tremendous delirium mode, but that's not the solution.
Right, and I think one of the things that has happened, especially in the Middle East, because of their divisiveness internally between Sunni, Shiite.
Oh, yeah, that craziness.
Yeah, that has really hampered at least the Muslim world to provide a united front against the incursion of the United States.
Exactly. That division allows the West to drive a spear into the heart. But, you know, something else I want to say is that, and I want to say this to the NATO countries, it's a very simple statement. What part of North Atlantic don't you understand?
Yeah. Right. And, of course, Turkey now being a member.
Well, yeah, or we'll try to surround Russia with NATO states. It's just, that's what politicians do. That's their bread and butter. They create. There's a great line from Cold Mountain. Ruby Twos, the character in there, says, "They call this all of this." I'm going to use the exact quote. "All of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand out in the rain and say, 'Shit, it's raining.'" That summarizes my view of international politics right now.
Well, and, you know, unfortunately, the people, we continue to believe the bull, don't we?
Yes, we don't turn. We will turn when the dollar tanks and it costs you $25 for a loaf of bread. Then maybe we'll find some religion.
I think it's a little late at that point, don't you?
Maybe the history of hyperinflation. You can read about that quite clearly anywhere on the internet. The hyperinflation in the early colonial period, the hyperinflation in Germany, hyperinflation after the French Revolution. You see, people, you can't create money by printing paper. You actually have to work.
Right. Right. And of course, you know, on top of that, we don't produce anything. We consume, but we don't produce.
And that has been allowed by the fact that we have the world's reserve currency, and oil is based on dollars,
priced dollars.
And so we don't have to pay the Chinese with our exports, because so far they've accepted this paper nonsense. But at some point they're not going to accept it. Wake up.
Well, Dennis, I mean, I could talk to you for hours, and I can't believe that our time has already come to a close. I hope we can schedule you and Natalie to come back, because I have more questions about the book and her process that she went through. So
yeah,
hopefully we can schedule another round, and we can come back again and discuss this again. Would you come
anytime,
back at some future time?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, anytime. I enjoyed the hour and a half. It went by fast.
Yes, it did. Dennis, thank you very much. That's my show today, everybody. And I think what you can glean from it today, I hope, as every day, is that you begin to question the items, the things that you're being taught and told by government, by media, and it's not really what it seems to be. And I'm going to close this show, like I do every other show, with the following. Wake up, America. See you next week.
Woohoo! Looks like I've got some studio. Yay! Hey, thanks again for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio. Please stand by for this short commercial message, and then we will have another short program for you today. So thanks again for tuning in.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants, I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
Excellent, excellent choice for the holidays for that special aunt or your mom. And then for the family, for the whole family.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
SodaStream, yes. And I know I get to go to visit Proof for the second annual Thanksgiving get-together, Freedomizer get-together, right there in Las Vegas. Be there, be square, or is that be there, don't be square, be there? Anyway, I'm going to get to test out that SodaStream, I hope. And, man, I'll be reporting back to you, let you know what's going on.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
also check out his lovely wife, Debbie Lewis, Securing Liberty, here on Freedomizer Radio, Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Pacific time. And she also has a website, securingliberty.com, and she's a great blogger, so go and check out her information. Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Oh, and here I'll give you a little bit of a plug on my show, See the Power in You, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 in the morning, Saturday, 4 p.m. Pacific time. On Mondays, we focus on healthy children in a toxic world with Donna, and I'm going to say her name, I hope, correctly, Voti, Granny Good Foods on Facebook. Check her out. And on Wednesdays, Miss Judy Lynn Cole. She is the director of the Ringing of the Rivers Project. You can go to seethepower.org, and there is a section there for See the Power Live at Freedomizer Radio, and you can go and check out both Donna and Judy and see what things they're up to and how to contact them. Oh, let's see. Afraid to move in the studio that it's gonna lock up on me again. I hope that it just behaves itself for just a couple more minutes. There we go. You know, the big issue these days has been genetically modified foods. And with Proposition 37 failing to pass due to, I believe, it was manipulated, but that's just my opinion. There can't be, it couldn't have been that close. Couldn't have been that close. Not with all of the information that was out there and put out there. Genetically modified foods are still in our environment. Whether they're labeled or not is really, that's not the issue. It's not the issue now. It was during election, and people put a lot of effort into that. The big companies that are against labeling spent a lot of money. They don't care that people want to know what's in their food. And they spent a lot of money telling people that it was going to cost them, their food dollars were going to go up because this was going to cost them so much money in labeling. No. It's not the labeling itself that's going to cost. It's the lack of sales when people learn that there's genetically modified foods in various products. They are just going to stop buying because people are getting smart. And they're getting themselves educated on the health risks of consuming genetically modified food. So that's my rant. What's my rant for today? GMO rant. Because I'm annoyed beyond anything that I can say. Annoyed is not even... Yeah, I know, Haley. She gets all excited when my energy goes up, and anger is the wrong word. I'm disgusted that so many smart people in the world have done something so stupid to release this something into the environment that they can't control. Indigenous crops are being destroyed because pollen travels in the wind. Pollinators, move it. How could they be so stupid? Okay, so anyway, we do have a pet prepping program that I'm going to play for you. So, in these times when we're prepping for ourselves, don't forget to prep for your dog. And you know, make sure that in times of emergencies, yes, Haley, that like what's going on with Sandy back east, that we are prepared to take care of our animals. So God bless everyone, and I'll see you next time, which is tomorrow, Monday, 10 in the morning. God bless.
I'm gonna take myself a piece of sunshine and paint it all over my sky, yeah. Be no rain. Be no rain. I'm gonna take the song from every bird and make them sing it just for me. About being free, yeah. Be no rain. Be no rain. And I think I'll call it morning from now on.
Jumping Ship with Captain Dan, and today we have on Ginger from Ginger's Pet House. Ginger, she's going to be talking to us today and telling us what we need to do to be prepared for an emergency with our pet. So, hi, Ginger. Welcome.
Hi, Captain Dan. How are you? Hello, everyone.
Doing great. I hope everybody else out there is doing well. I mean, we've got 3 hours left, so let's enjoy it. Yes, I know, yeah. I went to Goodwill and bought a bunch of clothes, and here in a little bit I get to go out and spread them all over the street, so it looks like people disappeared. Yeah, I'm evil that way. But anyways, I got a twisted sense of humor, and most people understand that, but, you know, nowadays, if you don't have a sense of humor in this day and age, you're not going to last very long.
No, I agree with you there.
So, tell us, Ginger. I know a little bit here about you. Your list here. I see that you own Ginger's Pet House, and it's in Independence, Ohio. You were a member of Quad City CERT and VIPS team, Volunteer in Police Service, and Independence Kiwanis. You're a U.S. Army veteran, which I did not know. Therapy dog handler. You're a rehabilitation foster caregiver of rescue dogs. And it says down here at the bottom that you've got three of your own rescue dogs that you've rescued.
I do.
Founded the Muffin Memorial Fund, helping abandoned pets. Your area coordinator for Your Pets for the Homeless. You received the 2009 Compassion Award from Sanctuary for Senior Dogs. And the Fox 8 Hot List for Best Pet Couture for the last three consecutive years. Good luck on this year then.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I think maybe three is enough. It's time to let somebody else in, you know?
Well, there you go. That's good. You spread it around a little bit. That's all nice.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Ginger, we all know that in an emergency, we went over last week what we should bring with us as humans, but we didn't really get into much about the pet stuff. So, and a lot of people, even if you're not bugging out with your pets, folks, it's now the rule that if you are evacuated from your area for any reason, that you take your pets with you. They do not want you to leave your pets anymore. After Katrina, they rethought the whole thing, and that was just such a disaster with the pets that were left down there and abandoned. And many of them never made it home. I mean, there was quite a few that had new homes.
Right.
But they're suggesting now that you plan for evacuation with your pet.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ginger is here today to tell us all about that.
I basically have five tips that I'd like to start with for animal disaster preparedness. And these are really essential things that you have to do ahead of time. And the first one would be to identify what your evacuation locations are. You know, you want to find somewhere where that will accommodate your pet. For example, you can use your veterinarian or your local pet spa or wherever you have your dog kenneled, whether it be a spa resort type of a situation or with your veterinarian if you were to go away and leave your pet at home. But you need to do that ahead of time and contact these places now, when nothing's going on, and saying, hey, in the event of an emergency, can you accommodate my pet? Because although you need to take your pet with you, there is no guarantee that that pet is coming in the shelter with you. That is one thing that's a little bit of a touchy subject. They are not required to allow your pet to be sheltered in the same shelter that you are in. It could be an adjoining area. It could be somewhere, you know, off-site from where you are. So the better prepared you are to make your own arrangements for your pet, that gives you a little bit more sense of stability of what's going to happen and a little more peace of mind. So if you do have to evacuate, you know, providing those places are not in the same area that you're evacuating from. These locations, they should be written down and stored with your disaster kit, which we'll get to a little bit later on in the show. And you want to practice loading your animals in and out of their carriers. You know, that's part of all of the evacuation preparedness, which would be your number one point on your list.
Yeah, if I may, real quick. If you have a dog and you have a carrier, get the carrier out. You can take if the dog won't go into it on its own, you can take the front of it out and make it like a bed, make it like their own rooms. I have several friends that crate they just use the carriers for crating their dogs, and their dogs think that's their room. That is their room. I mean, they go in there and they've got their toys and they've got their things, their blankets and all that sort of stuff, and they will go in there and they'll just lay down and sleep, you know, and that's just where they live. They live in, you know, that's their room. So they've got, they feel comfortable. So if you can make it your pet feel comfortable in their own space, do it at home. So it's much less, they're much more likely to be apt to spend more time in that crate if anything would ever to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So start them early, folks. If you don't have a crate now, get one and start it early. Make sure you have one that's big enough for your pet, but not too big, to be able to turn around in it. You don't want them to be able to have the room to poop and still lay down.
Sorry about the barking there.
That's okay. I've got a dog, too, here, and if he heard yours, he'd start barking, too.
I just had someone come to the door here of the shop, and she's trying to guard me here.
I see. If you guys look up there on the pictures there, you'll see a picture of Ginger with a couple of her dogs. And also, you'll see a picture of my dog, with Dingo, and his cart. He pulls a cart with him, and that's part of our thing. He's a working dog. But anyways, Ginger, please, I interjected. Please continue.
That's all right. The other point I want to make, which would be number two on the list, is microchip your pets. Because if you don't have a tag on them, their collars could get lost. You know, with a microchip, most any of the shelters, they have a microchip reader, and they can identify that pet right away. It really is a very, very simple process. And I have both of my Chihuahuas are microchipped, and so is my Jack Russell Terrier. So that's a very, very good way to identify the pet without worrying about a tag being lost off of their collar or something like that.
Right. It is. We've had experience with a lost dog today already. Darn it, I think we just had Cheryl and I lost her. Cheryl, if that was you, call back in, please, love. We found a lost dog today. Today was our local parade where they go up and down the street here. And just about half an hour before the parade started, this little Yorkie was running through the neighbor's yard, and, you know, down the corner and through the neighbor's yard, and comes running up towards me, and then cuts across me and goes into the alley. So I went over, and nobody's around. It's like I'm asking people, is this your dog? You know. So I went and grabbed her and put a leash on her, and nobody was around to claim her. So she ended up staying during the parade with me. And finally, we got a vet that's just a half a block away from me. So they came through, and they came through during the parade. And I said, hey, I've got when you guys get done, swing back through. And they brought the scanner because the dog had a brand new collar. Had been trimmed. You know, a little Yorkie, male Yorkie. Just been trimmed, new collar, no chip. They came back around later. She had no chip. She had no tags on her either.
Yeah.
But, if she would have had a chip, we would have just been able to make a phone call. And the owner would have been able to come get the dog right away. He did come by. It was a couple hours later. But he did come by, and I sent him to the vets, because the vets actually took him back with them. Because I don't have the facilities to keep a dog with my mutt here. He didn't like her. Don't know why. But yes, tag them. And, you know, it's not the, you know, don't get all conspiracy theory on me and all that sort of stuff. And these chips are RFIDs, but, you know, they don't have any trackers in them. They're not like that, and, you know, honestly, if the government wanted to track every dog in the United States, it'd be absolutely they'd be spending more on that than they are on defense, actually. So.
Well, and I'm more concerned about being reunited with my pet than whether or not the government knows where my dog is.
Exactly.
So
same way.
I want my dog back.
Right.
And also start a buddy system, which would kind of be the third point with your neighbors. You know, write down the necessary information, exchange keys back and forth. If you're not comfortable with giving them a key, just exchange disaster plans with each other, and that also helps to get one more person involved in doing preparedness. You know, you're actually not only helping yourself, then you're helping a neighbor as well.
Yeah. I think I've got Cheryl here. I think we're going to bring her in. Cheryl, is that you?
It is.
Hi.
Sorry, I was having a little phone trouble.
I see that. I mean, you get your hand up, and I go to click the mic, and it'd be gone. It's like, wait a minute. Your phone would be, your number would be gone. Well, we'll stick with us then. Cheryl, this is Ginger from Ginger's Pet House. I don't have, where is it, your full name here? Ginger McClutchin?
Ginger's good.
Ginger's good.
Ginger's
Mac. No, Ginger McClutchin.
Ginger
okay.
Mac.
Yeah. Well, and this is Cheryl Greenlee, Cheryl Lynn, I'm sorry, my co-host here.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Ginger. Nice to meet you.
Likewise.
So did you catch any of that, Cheryl?
I did catch a little bit about the RFID chips. I do have Haley chips. Just, you know, it's one of those things, just in case for some reason she were to get loose from me and, you know, get scared, run off, which is probably not likely because she has a little bit of anxiety whenever I leave anywhere. But I have had to leave her with my son, and for short periods of time, I've had to leave her with other people. And I think that's, you know, it's just a wise thing to do.
You know, it's always best if the people who might be handling your pet in an emergency, that they're familiar and they're comfortable with your pet. So it's nice to do that exchange once in a while.
Jack. I also put interesting little thing. I put in my telephone, in my cell phone under ICE in case of emergency. There's a little blurb in there about the dog, how to handle her.
Yeah.
And that leads into another section of taking photos with yourself and your pet, so that they can match up the two of you together. You know, sometimes we don't always have the credentials that we wish we had to prove ownership in an emergency, but if you've got a photo with yourself and your pet, and it's handy to have that in your cell phone or copies of it in your disaster kit, that can be the difference of you getting your dog back or not.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, just like today, that dog, he could have been home hours earlier. And the poor guy, when he came to the house, was just absolutely distraught. Yeah, I mean, you know that Yorkie meant the world to his wife. And he was in hot water if he didn't come home with her, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But, yeah, pets can be more than just pets. I mean, more than just family, even. You can learn to rely on them. So, yeah, if you've got a working dog, you know, I mean, working dogs aren't that bad because they tend not to stray as much.
And I don't know if Cheryl has any other kind of preliminary preparedness essentials, but my last point is going on and moving into creating your disaster kit. So I don't want to move forward, you know, if someone else has something else to interject.
No, please go ahead.
Yeah, please continue. We're here for you, Ginger. This is your time, love.
Oh, how great. That's wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll just interject here and there, and then if we get too bad for you, just tell us to shut up. I'm used to it.
No problem at all. I have one big dog kit in my home. Now, I've got three dogs, and all of them are under 15 pounds. So that's kind of a good thing for me. I have a backpack that I use for camping that I also can put all of my dogs in and carry them on my back if I need to. That's my safety net for not having a way to carry three different kennels with me. If I have to make a quick run for it, I'm ready to go. And all of my medical information for the pets, their IDs, the photo, a week supply of their prescription medication and their flea and tick preventative. I have all of that extra is in that kit.
And not to mention your heartworm preventative, too, and any other meds that
you
need.
And this, I don't know how long I'm going to be gone. So I try to plan ahead. They do have their I use shoe tags for the flea and tick prevention, and they always have those on their collar, but if somehow they would be disabled, I've got a spare set. And I am constantly adding to my kit, my disaster kit. I'll come across something, I'll say, oh, that would be handy to have. I should have that with me.
Yeah.
And go down and put that in. Now, when you do put your medications and things in, you need to remember to rotate those out.
Yeah,
every time I get in, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how long do the medications last? I should have waited until the end, but.
No, that's all right. Most of the medications will have an expiration date, you know, on the bottle.
I've heard of people being able to go get a 6-month supply.
Mm-hmm. You can do that. But what I do is if I have a 6-month supply, when I go and get my next 6-month supply, I put half of it down in the kit. And then when I get another 6-month supply, I take that half out and put a new half
rotate.
In.
Rotate. Yeah, you got to rotate.
And rotate it out all the time.
It's just like your food, people. The medication is actually even more important to rotate than your food. Bad food might make you just a little sick. Bad medicine can kill you.
Correct. And when it comes to food, I guess the rule of thumb is to take a 1-week supply. I happen to use a dehydrated food for my pets that's very easy in the envelopes. And it also, I could eat it if it came down to it. I could eat the same thing. So I kind of like the convenience of that. And it's very easy and very light to carry. If necessary, it's not like trying to take 3 cases of canned food with me.
Yeah.
So, I think I gave, there are some website links that we had talked about putting on the chat, and I think they're up there already, if I'm not mistaken. And one of those is Honest Kitchen, and that's the dehydrated food that I use.
Okay. The kitchen one? Okay, I'll pop it in again.
Mm-hmm, Honest Kitchen. Mm-hmm.
By the way, for everybody who's listening on the telephones, if you come to the Blog Talk Radio / Freedomizer Radio site and you can find this episode in the archives, down there in the comments section will be all the links that we drop here today in the chat room and information on Ginger as well. It's all there in the comments section already.
And if you are taking a kibble-type food, you want to have it in an airtight or waterproof container of some kind. You can double Ziploc, you know, freezer bag it if you want to, but you have to remember to always rotate that out as well. And I just taught a class about disaster preparedness and opened up my kit for everyone to see, and my food was expired. So I was sure I reminded everyone that I, too, can mess up. So...
Oh, yeah. It's not that hard.
No, it's not that hard. You kind of say, okay, it's there if I need it. But you want to get in the habit of practicing all the time, too.
Yeah,
with a lot of the bad weather that we've had lately, I've been down in the basement a lot looking
right.
at my
oh,
kit.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's like me and my first aid kits. I've got like 7 or 8 first aid kits, and going through those, just rotating stuff through those every year gets to be a pain. Actually, I've been thinking about slowing down and just maybe just carrying this the basic 3, and then my surgery kit. But you never know when somebody else is going to need it. That's the problem.
No, correct. And for those of you that use canned food, for example, I have a chihuahua that has no teeth. And had it not been for this dehydrated food that I found, I would need to take cans with me. If you're taking cans, everything's not pull top yet, so you're going to need a can opener and something to scoop that out with.
Right.
So remember to put that in as well.
Yeah, that's something else. Yeah, don't forget the animals have to eat off of dishes, too. You can't just pour some stuff out on the ground and expect them to eat it. It's,
no.
That's not healthy, and especially where everybody is at or where you might be at. You know, you might be not safe.
And collapsible food and water bowls are very easy to come by these days.
Oh, yeah. I found them at the Dollar Tree store. For a dollar a piece, folks. You know, little fabric.
Excellent.
Little fabric ones. Yeah, I bought a dozen of them. I'm giving them away to friends. When I see a friend with a dog out, and it's like, oh, I gotta get my dog some water. Well, here's a dish, and here's a bottle of water. Enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at $1 a piece, you know, you can give them to friends.
Sure.
And I do the same with the kibble foods as well. When we're talking about the medications. When you get a new bag of food, go and take that plastic bag out that you have and replenish that.
Mm-hmm.
Use what you had in your kit and then refresh it constantly. I don't let it go more than 2 months if it's a kibble type of food. Now, I did mess up on my packets that I had in there. It just kind of spaced the whole thing out that, oh, they would last forever, but that's not true.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat room said, use a frisbee.
Yep, that works too. That works too. I've had to take a little, like a neck bandana and put that out on the ground and put the food in there.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have anything with me, you know, that she could eat or drink out of. So that works as well. Anything that's going to kind of keep it off the ground and, bandana's easy just to shake out and.
Well, not to mention,
it works.
I mean, there's a reason a lot of these farm dogs have bandanas on. A bandana is a handy thing, you know, to have, and for a pet, it's just the same way. A lot of farmers just put a bandana around their dog rather than actually putting a collar on them, because the bandana is more useful even to a dog. I mean, it's gonna keep a lot of the sweat off of them. You can use it to bandage them up in, you know, real quick if you need it. You can feed them on it. There's the 1,002 uses of bandana, of course. So don't forget, cotton bandanas are best, folks. Sorry?
Do you have a document on that one, Dan? 1,001 uses?
No, I don't. I pulled that out of the air. It's like that. I think somebody at one time did do like 1,001 uses for a bandana. I think it's out there somewhere, but if you just search Google, hit Google and search uses for bandana, I'm sure you'll find a dozen different books.
There you go.
You can use it for water filters, pick berries and put your berries in them. The list is endless. I mean, and the bigger the bandana, this tends to be the better you use. Get the 18-inch ones for yourselves, because you'll probably appreciate the bigger one better.
Mm-hmm. And you can also let it double as a muzzle if it's absolutely necessary.
Oh, yeah, true.
So there's 1,001 uses.
There you go.
1,013, I think we're on now, but let's go.
Oh, okay.
No, I do know. But anyways, Ginger, continue, please, love.
Okay.
Don't let us interrupt.
With your first aid kits that are also in your kit, a basic animal first aid kit, and some type of a first aid book.
Yeah, if I actually can I plug a book here real quick? It's the dog repair book, a do-it-yourself guide for the dog owner, and it's by Ruth B. James, DMV. I'll try to scrounge up a link for it. I use that book. It's a big book. I ordered it. I think I ordered it from Black Ice online.
Hmm?
Or either that or Ostrander. But I use that book, and it's a good source. It's got a lot of good things in there for it too.
Hmm.
But I'm sorry, Jenny. Mm-hmm. I'm always interested.
That's all right. We can stay on the first aid kit for a moment. You're usually going to have some type of, like, maybe a 3-inch gauze in there. That also, again, can be used as a muzzle. And if not for your own dog, for a dog that you may see since you're familiar with handling pets, you may come across a dog that has become separated from its owner. You may need that muzzle somewhere along the line. So there are several places now that I haven't experienced this myself, but they have said that in an evacuation situation, your dog must be muzzled.
Be muzzled, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's another link from ProGuard. They actually have an evacuation muzzle that has the word evacuation muzzle on it. And they're pretty handy. They fold down very flat. They can go in your kit. They're a mesh-style muzzle. And no matter what you use, whether you have to use a bandana or use a 3-inch gauze or you have one of these special muzzles that are particularly made for that type of a situation, it may become a necessity to have. You know, they could say, you can't bring that dog here. It's not muzzled.
Yeah.
So,
I was lucky a few years back, the local pet store closed down, and they were closing down, and they were just basically giving stuff away. So I actually got a set of muzzles. I got one of every size. I've got like six of them now. So. And I keep all those in the repair kit.
And we're going to touch back on identification again. I can't stress this enough, that you keep in a plastic bag in your kit, in your disaster kit, medical records, your veterinary contact, the photos of you and your pet, any photos with your pet that shows any distinguishing features. For example, one of my dogs has pink pads on all his feet except for one. He has one black pad in the middle on one of his back feet. So that's kind of a distinguishing mark for him. It doesn't hurt to have write-on identification tags as well in there, some type of a little, but there are many, many different kinds you can purchase now. And if you can't buy something, if you don't find that readily available to you, a lot of these little key tags that mark keys, you can write on that with a permanent marker. Put a piece of tape over top of it because you want to watch. There could be water in the situation that you end up in, and if that splashes on that tag and all the ink runs, it's not going to do you any good at all.
Right.
So you can seal that up with some tape, packing tape of some kind, and you want to be sure that you have your proof of vaccination. In case you have to board your pet, that is a requirement. And in a situation where everybody's pushing to get their pet somewhere, if you've got all this documentation and you can just pull it right out and show it, you're going to the head of the line, I'll guarantee you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And something I've noticed with I have a lot of friends that do a bit of traveling. And one of the things they do is they've always had their dog tags. On the front, they have their contact information, and they always include a cell phone number,
mm-hmm.
a cell phone you're carrying. And on the back, it has emergency contact information. And most of my friends have chosen to use an emergency contact that is not in the same area as you are in.
Mm-hmm.
That way, your emergency, if you get evacuated and the dog's found, your emergency contact more than likely didn't get evacuated. So they
mm-hmm.
can still at least find out something about the dog or who the owner is that way.
Right.
Yeah. I took that one step further, and I had a tag made at the local pet store, like PetSmart or Petco. And it's a tag that says emergency number, and it has my girlfriend's name on it and her cell phone number.
Yeah.
And she does live in a different city. I had it made for when I went to Japan for 5 weeks and she watched my dog. And I wanted to make sure in case Haley got loose while she was there for that 5 weeks that there was an emergency contact number on her collar. And turns out it's just, you know, it was a good idea just all the way around. She's
yeah.
a big dog. She weighs 80 pounds. Just not everybody is going to want to take an 80-pound dog in case of an emergency.
Yeah, that's true. And back to paperwork real quick. I just dropped a link in the chat room there. Coughlin makes a very good waterproof pouch for documents. It was actually made to keep maps in, and we used them when we were kayaking and canoeing. We kept maps and other stuff we needed to be waterproof in. I've been suggesting these for everybody for their bug out bags to keep with their personal documentation and your deeds to your house and all that sort of stuff, because you don't want to leave any of that stuff behind if you have to go. You want to be able to put it all in a bag or keep it in a bag in a fire safe or something like that and keep it close to the door so you can grab it on the way out the door. But keeping your paperwork so it will stay dry is very important, because wet paper is just as good as no paper at all. So you do want to, you either want to get them all laminated, or it's even cheaper if you just go get one of these waterproof bags and just keep it in the waterproof bag so it's always there and ready to go.
Yeah, good idea.
And there is also an iPhone app now that is called Pet Paw, and you can enter all of your pet's information into this little program here in your phone, and you can email it to your emergency contact that's out of the area. You can send it to your veterinarian. You could send it to anybody right from your phone. So I find that to be helpful as well, because it does keep all of their medications and their vaccination history, lets you know what conditions they might have. It's very hard to recall all of these things when you're in the middle of some type of disaster. You know, say, oh, well, I don't need that, I'll remember. If it's an emergency and everything is scattered helter-skelter everywhere, it's very difficult to remember every little thing that you want to be able to tell someone.
Yes. Yeah, so if you have it written down, you know, if you have a list of that sort of stuff written down, it makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I was just going to say, actually, we slipped right through the break and I didn't even realize it because we were enjoying ourselves too so much. So I need to take a... need to take a station break here real quick and pay the bills, and we'll be right back with Ginger from Ginger's House, and of course Cheryl, and Cheryl Lynn, my co-host, my beautiful co-host is there, and this is Captain Dan, and I'll be right back. We'll be right back with you folks. Okay, console's not working.
Hi folks,
there it is.
Here. I want to talk to you about a great preparedness resource, tomorrowsharvest.com. Whether it's an economic collapse or nature's fury, there's no feeling more secure than knowing that your loved ones will be well fed. If it's time to bug out or just camping with the family, Tomorrow's Harvest offers high quality, cost-effective, and long-term smart food storage. Get your free sample. The choices are great. From blueberry pancakes to cowboy chili, no one else has the meal variety of Tomorrow's Harvest. They also provide other survival necessities. Check out the various packages and customize your meal supply. Remember, there's no reason for fear today when you prepare with Tomorrow's Harvest. Go to www.tomorrowsharvest.com and tell them you're a freedomizer.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience, concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? Subscribe now for a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster. Experience the difference. Subscribe now online at theinternationalforecaster.com. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain tailored investment advice just for you. Don't wait. Get online and subscribe today. theinternationalforecaster.com.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Howdy folks, Buford T. Slaughter here. As part of my continuing rehabilitation, and in conjunction with my anger management coach and my parole officer, I am required to do community service in the form of public service announcements. The TSA needs you. If you're the kind of guy that doesn't mind looking at naked boys and girls as they walk through the naked body scanners, or if you don't mind pulling an 82-year-old grandma out of her wheelchair, beating the heck out of her, make sure she's not carrying any bomb-making equipment, and if you don't mind taking people that object to this kind of treatment, slapping the heck out of them, pull them in the back room, and strip searching them, then the TSA is for you. The TSA is hiring men and women to work at numerous locations around the United States, and the only qualifications are you must have longer than average index fingers, be able to sit and stare at a screen while naked people walk in front of you, and be able to take orders without any questions whatsoever. So, if you're interested in the TSA, please call 1-800-BROWN-SHIRT. 1-800-BROWN-SHIRT. And on a personal note, when the TSA does frisk you as you're going through the airport security, it is an act of love for the U.S. government. It is not an act of rape. So please do not beat them up. Thank you for your time.
I hit the wrong one, but oh well. Well, we're back. This is Captain Dan. You're listening to Jumpin' Ship with Captain Dan. And today we've got Ginger here from Ginger's Pet House. And we have, of course, my beautiful co-hostess Cheryl is in with us as well. Well, Ginger, where were we at,
well,
love? I know I cut you off there, so we missed our
that's
break.
That's all right.
I think we were talking
about a documentation list. And, you know, it's okay to say documentation list, but what exactly is that? And you want to be sure that you have the owner's name, the home address, current contact information, which, you know, would be great to have a cell phone on there as well, a physical description of the animal, the vaccination history, any observable physical conditions. Like, for example, I have a double rear amputee chihuahua. It's kind of hard to miss that.
Yeah.
Current medical conditions and medications that they need, and the frequency that they're given, that would be helpful as well.
Oh, yeah.
If you have microchip, you know, what is your identification of the animal? Is it tattooed? Does it have a brand? You know, we can't forget our larger animals as well.
Yeah.
Horses and livestock, alpacas, llamas. That's
goat,
all part
sheep,
of this
yeah.
situation, too. Yeah, goats, sheep, everything. What their behavioral traits are. What their feeding schedule, any type of special dietary needs, and if they have a bite history. And if anyone is interested in having, you know, this list, you know, compiled, written down for them, I can email it to them. They can just send me an email and say, hey, what about that document list? And I'm very happy to share that information. There's another checklist. Is what if you find an animal in your evacuation, you find another animal that has lost its way from its owner. There's a documentation checklist for that, too, which would
nice.
Be, you know, where you found it, what the description of is, what did you do with the animal. If you have lost an animal, same thing goes for you. Where was the last place you saw it? And describe the same physical descriptions and how did the animal get away, or was it running, or was it left in the home, whatever. And that can help to bring people and their pets back together again. If it's too large of an animal for you to take with you when you evacuate, you need to have all of those physical conditions, et cetera, documented so that they locate your animal, the two of you can get back together again. The more you have written down and the more you have stored and the more information that you can give people, the better off you are. And I needed to take a hit off the water for a moment. Thank you.
Okay. We all have to do that every once in a while.
Ginger is talking too much.
That's right, love. You do realize you've got 5 hours yet to go.
Yes, that's wonderful.
You probably thought too, couldn't you?
I could do it, too. There's a lot of information. You're right. We could do this whole course that I teach. Why not?
Well, it's always a possibility.
Where are you located, Ginger?
I'm in Independence, Ohio, which is about 7 or 8 miles south of Cleveland.
I knew there was something I liked about you.
You did. It's that Midwestern gal part, right?
It is. It is. I'm from Akron.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go, Shal.
Just down the street.
So we're pretty prepared with our emergency responses here in the area. Quad City CERT that I belong to, we just had a two-night course. We did 3.5 hours one night and 3.5 hours the next night. So it was a total of 7 hours in
wow.
a animal disaster rescue classes to prepare people on how to handle animals in emergency situations. And then I've rewritten that class to teach to the general public, which we'll be doing in August.
Okay, for more like
wonderful.
Events.
Mm-hmm.
Great. That's awesome. Can't wait to hear. I think more cities need that. I don't think we have anything like that around here. I think we have one for farmers. For evacuate, you know, to teach farmers how to evacuate livestock. And I think they hold that like every 5 years or something like that, from what I understand. But I don't think we have anything here for pets. To learn, you know, to teach people how to take care, how to care for their pet in a situation like that.
Yeah. And I think that as pet owners, we need to realize that the brunt of the responsibility lies with us.
Yeah, it does.
Not with your emergency workers. You know, we need to be prepared what to do with our pets. We know our pets better than anyone.
Yep.
And
exactly.
It doesn't take that much to get a kit together. We're going to start a program here locally, which I think would be great for other localities to do that in communities as well. Take the whole list of items that should be in your disaster kit, and every month we have a different store in the area who runs a special on that item that you need for your disaster kit.
Hmm.
So it's almost like a little scavenger hunt. You know, you have the list, and each month it's published where you should go to buy that at a discounted price for your disaster kit.
Nice.
And it helps the local businesses and, you know, to get to know more of the people in our communities. But it also helps you put together a disaster kit when you say, oh, I'll do it next week, and then all of a sudden a tornado or a flood comes and you haven't done it yet.
Right.
Yep. Yep. If the storm's coming in, now's not the time to start making one.
No. And there is a disaster kit that is off to a very, very good start for you that's already put together.
Yeah.
And that would be the ice cube kits, and they have them for dogs and cats. And that has basically what you need to get started with, minus your food. I mean, the little bowls are in there and a little ID tag, and there's also a toy. We don't want to forget to have something for our pets to occupy themselves with.
I can't remember her name. I can't remember her name right now, but we've had her. I think we've had her on Freedomizer Radio before as well.
Yeah, Leslie Fastenberg.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, we've had her on here. We've had her on here before, and I know she's been on Be Prepared Radio too. She sells a lot of products for emergency kits, not just for pets, but a lot of other stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. And there's a nice little box with a handle on it, and you just pick it up and off you go.
Yep, she's got grab and go kits. They're really nice.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite tool in my emergency dog kit is my tweezers. I use those all the time. I don't know why. She gets herself in trouble all the time.
Hmm.
No, they're handy to have. And when you're packing up your kit, don't forget to take cleanup materials.
Oh, yeah.
We need
and
to pick
rubber.
Up bags and rubber gloves. You're right.
Yep. Yeah, I was just getting ready to say rubber gloves.
Mm-hmm.
you never know when you're going to have to deal with an injured animal, and rubber gloves are always best, especially if you have a chance of getting nicked or bitten. Well, bitten probably wouldn't hurt much, but, you know. But anyway, yes.
That's what those nice canvas ones come in handy for.
Canvas gloves?
Big canvas work gloves.
Yeah, you put them on over
that's
your rubber.
That's what I have in mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what we do when we clean the river down here, since there has been a little bit of medical waste here and there, and we're not sure where it's coming from, but we've been wearing canvas gloves over our rubber gloves here for the last few years.
Mm-hmm. And Captain Dan, I think it would be great if you could interject about how to be sure that the water you're using is clean. For example, I said I have dehydrated food,
right?
So I need to have water. So if you wouldn't mind,
yeah, that's not
elaborating.
A problem. Well, the best way to get the cleaners, clean water, is to actually buy a water filter. MSR makes a really good one. I've heard some good things about Acadians, but I'm not sure. I haven't used them myself. I do know the MSRs are great. Most of my friends have the MSR filters. And you can with those, it'll filter down to, I'm not sure how many microns it is, but it filters out almost everything. Now, a lot of people think you can boil the water to get everything out. Well, boiling the water will get a lot of stuff out. You still need to filter the water afterwards, and there is some things that won't be killed off by the boiling. Although you could eventually kill it all off, but you know, you'd lose half your water. The bandanas are always nice. You can put, if you have charcoal, you can put charcoal in a bandana and filter water through it that way. It's not going to clean out a lot of the stuff. It's not going to make it completely potable. But if you have the pills, you have the iodine, and then pills for the water, and then you have they've also got another pill that goes with the iodine pills to take the iodine taste out of the water. Those are always handy if you don't mind the Chemtax tabs. But most people I know do the MSR. If you don't have a clean enough place to do it, yeah, we've boiled. You always have to boil and filter. Even sometimes we will filter with the MSR and use the tabs as well, depending on where we're at and if we know there's something wrong with the area's water. If not, you know, we generally don't err on the side of caution too much, but you know, in a bug out situation or a real emergency situation, you would, because in a real emergency situation like a flood, you know, you can't just go to a stream or the river and get the water in. I mean, in a flood's one of the worst areas you could actually be in. Flood water is really, really dirty, nasty stuff, because everything that comes up that's in the sewer is overflows, and the sewage treatment plant overflows, and it's all in the water together. So yeah, you've got to kind of treat it. Now, Perry was just saying something here. I missed it there. Oh no, I thought he was talking about water filtration. Perry's a urban survivalist. He knows all about surviving in the city. But, yeah, water filters is probably your best way. You can get an MSR water filter for $100, and you can use it for yourself and your dog. Matter of fact, if you're going to be bugging out with emergency supplies or anyways, anything, you need a water filter in your bag. They're indispensable, and get the ones with the ceramic. If you get the ones with the ceramic filters, I think those are probably the best ones, but you can get a couple extra filters to carry along with you, and, you know, one of those filters would last a four-person family probably about a month, depending on the water that you get. And you can clean them off. You just reverse flow them. And they do have the MSRs do have a setting for that, where you can reverse flow your filters right there in the pump. But I think that's what you were talking about.
Yes, that is what I was talking about.
Was that enough?
You know, and I'm wondering, a lot of times I've been used to using, like, bleach in water, too.
You can use the bleach in the water, but they find out it doesn't kill a lot of the bacteria and the viruses that are in there now. The bacteria gets almost all of them, but some of the viruses, it doesn't kill off. So they're talking about now. Most people are almost doing away with bleach, unless you have the ways to use bleach. Where if you were to save your tap water, or you know have clean water to save, bleach is more of a storage medium for water. You put a couple drops of bleach in each container of water, and the water will store longer and stay cleaner, especially if it's in clear containers, because otherwise it'll get you'll start getting algae growing in it.
Mm-hmm. And kind of while we're talking about water, something that I saw recently here with some floods that we had was don't let your dog walk through all of the flood water and all the nasty stuff that's there. You know, people were walking around looking at other people's houses and what happened to them, and you know, they're walking the dog through the middle of the street with all this gunky stuff that's there.
Right.
Try to avoid that if possible. I have some little, like, rubber boots that are in my kit that will just slip over their feet. If they have to walk through something, then they're protected. It's almost like it's a little nitrile booty. They look like they belong in the OR, but it comes in handy.
Yeah. Real quick, Heidi and Reno, I'm still looking into the Berkeys. From what I understand, for the home use, if you're going to be butting in, they're not bad. The water bottles I hear are excellent. The Berkey's got a water filter bottle. And you just fill it up and it automatically filters your water. And yeah, those would be great too. Make sure, like everything else, make sure you've got another filter, especially if you plan on being out for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Flood waters are the worst. But I'm sorry, Ginger, go ahead, continue, please.
Well, I'm kind of, you know, thinking now about different things that you might want to be sure that you add into your kit. You know, is it absolutely necessary that you have it, but would it be really handy? It'd be great to have something, as I said, for your animal to play with.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm thinking
like,
toys. You'd want a chew toy, and you'd probably also want a rope toy, you know, one of those floss ropes, because those are really good at helping keep teeth clean. Something that a lot of people don't think of, and I found it almost indispensable, is Paw Protect salve that you put on the bottom of their paws to protect their paws. And this comes in. This is really good in the winter time, because in the winter time you tend to have stuff get on their paws or their paws get dried out. And actually my dingo walked across, we were going into Tractor Supply, I believe it was, or Rural King, one of the two, and he walked across the metal strip there on the floor on the outside, and it was so cold his paw actually stuck to it a little bit. So we had to put some salve on it. And something else for your pets, if they need paw protection, get them a good pair of boots. Don't get them a cheap pair of boots. Get them a good pair of boots. REI sells some really nice ones. And yeah, at REI's, they're going to be pretty stiff from the price for them. But if you keep them and keep them well, and your dog's not going to try to chew them off of them once he gets used to them, they will last years. And I mean, I've seen some of them that last, you know, three or four dogs. So 20, 30 years or so. But get a good dog food.
And many times,
your
approach to putting them on and getting your dog used to walking in them as well, be sure you have some little treat or something that they like when you put them on. Take their mind off the boots. And all of a sudden they're walking in them without even realizing that it's something different.
Right. And another thing I do is I went to the dollar store and bought baby socks. Yes, just regular old size 1 baby socks for my dog. Get the right size ones. Now, these will do several things. In the winter, if you're going to be out for a long amount of time and you've got their boots on, you can put them in the boots for liners. Or in the summertime, if they need them, you can use them for that. I get them in packages of 6. And, yeah, I do carry all 6 of them because you never know if he's going to catch his foot on something, or he's going to cut, or something like that. And one of these socks, it's really easy to just slip on a paw and tape up, especially if you're on the move and you can't, you know, worry too much about it. You slip a sock on a paw, tape it up. You know, if you have to put two socks on a paw to tape it up, do it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got five, you've got six of them there. So. And you still have enough for anything else. Great. What's that for?
I dropped a link for some absolutely wonderful dog boots.
Now, see, I was looking at REIs, and I've been looking at a few of them, and I had almost decided to make my own because I could not find anything that was actually rugged and decent enough for the dingo here.
Check those out, Dan.
Yeah, they look neat, but, you know, like me, I'm a practical guy. How are they going to last? They look like short neck REIs. If you were actually going to be getting a pair of good, of nicer boots for the dog, get them that's a little longer. But these are nice looking boots. I don't know how they would fit or how, but they look like they go on easy. They zip up the front. But yeah, good boots are a must.
They've got rubber soles on them.
Yeah, I don't know how the rubber soles work out actually. I've been using the Kudura, and there's a lot of different thoughts on dog boots about what to use, and it comes down to what climate or what you're going to be dealing with. In the snow, I wouldn't use these.
I'm with you, Dan. I don't care much for the rubber-soled boots because it's so unfamiliar to the way they walk. And if you're going through some type of a disaster situation where there's a lot of debris and they're going to have to navigate through this kind of stuff, their footing is very important.
Right. The last thing you need is a distracted dog.
And no ACLs going out on the dog for tripping in their boots. So.
Right. But the rubber soles like that tend to make it a little heavier. I actually like the Kudura. Cloth-based bottom ones, and especially in the wintertime, because in the wintertime, the regular cloth will give a dog more of a grip rather than a smooth or a nylon or a naugahyde. I've seen people make naugahyde boots, you know, with the naugahyde bottoms on for protection. It's like, oh yeah, it's just a nice little doggy protector. It's about the size of their pads. It'll fit. Yeah, it's great. And they get out there, and the dog's sliding on the snow or on the ice. He can't go anywhere. I mean, it's worse than... You might as well take his boots off, he'd actually have better traction. But, you know, I only use Dingo's... I only put his boots on him when we need to put his boots on him, usually. He doesn't wear them all the time when we're working. If we're out for an extended period of time, I will put him in... put them into him and pull him out of him every once in a while, just to kind of keep his feet warm, so... So it's not too much of a problem. He doesn't have a problem stepping on too many things, though. Most dogs don't. But you'll never know. I mean, if you get into one of those flooded areas, it could be helpful to have something a little stockier on the bottom if you're worried about him walking on broken glass underwater or something like that. But in general, no. I don't know about those. The REIs, I think they've got. I'm not sure. They've got some sort of rubber pad on the bottom, but it's just a pad. It's not a full sole. So that might be a little easier. You have to remember, unlike us, I guess some people do. They tend to pull their feet together and down as they go. So what happens is with a shoe like this, they don't get any grip. You know, it's like you take your hand and you take it, try to grip. That's what they do with their feet. You know, they curve it and make a grip. With soft-soled ones, they can get in there and get it, and it flexes more with their feet. With these, with the rubber-soled ones here, I'm not sure it'd give them enough room to actually do it. I think it'd actually end up pinching on the top on the instep there.
I see.
But that's just my opinion. Not to mention, I don't like zippers either, especially for dogs that have like hair on their legs. That could be a big turnoff. I mean, I definitely hate to get a Shar-Pei, try to get a Shar-Pei in one of those things. You might catch more than just that.
Sure might.
Might catch his skin. And you know what, folks? We talked through right a whole another half hour, and it's time for a break again.
That's right.
So we're just, yeah, 2 hours isn't going to be enough, I don't think. We might have to invade Dr. Prepper's show, which is coming up here in an hour on our on the station. Okay, so we'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Jumping Ship with Captain Dan. We're here with Ginger from Ginger's Pet House and my co-host, Cheryl Lynn. See you in a few minutes, folks.
Hello, Freedomizers. Have you heard of PETL, People Ending Discrimination on Legs? Why don't you join me, Nikki, on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific Time. We cover anything from tattoos, piercings, hair color, barefoot rights, interracial matters, school uniforms, work uniforms, weight issues, and any type of bullying. That's PETL, People Ending Discrimination on Legs. See y'all on Saturday. 3 p.m. Eastern, that's noon Pacific Time. Feeling the effects of all that GMO food? Has TB left you completely disconnected from the rest of man? Do you have any control over your life or that of your family? Want to know how to escape the matrix? Then join me, Nikki, and together we can rise above dehumanization. Only on Freedomizer Radio. And you can catch me Monday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, that's noon Pacific Time, and Saturdays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, and 1 p.m. on the West Coast. Hope to see you there, Freedomizers.
I still meet people who believe that in tough times that Big Brother will save their skin. Really, the list of cities and states that are bankrupt is growing as I speak. Let's face it, you are the first line of defense in a crisis. Do you have an extra supply of storable food and water? The stores will be empty in a matter of hours in a crisis. Look, if you're willing to face reality, call Jan LeBaron at Healthy Harvest, and she can help you get started no matter your budget. Healthy Harvest carries a full line of emergency preparedness and food storage products, including 300 different dehydrated and freeze-dried foods. She has vital information on water storage and purification, emergency evacuation kits, and supplies. Jan LeBaron at Healthy Harvest is in the business of saving lives. Your life, your family's. Call Jan, toll-free 888-311-8940. 888-311-8940. Call now.
Words on walls that you can't spell. Be prepared to hide that pack of cigarettes. Don't make books if you cannot cover best. Keep those reefers hidden where you're sure that they will not be found. And be careful not to smoke them when the Scoutmaster's around, for he only will insist that they be shared. Be prepared. Prepared and be clean in word and deed. Don't solicit for your sister, that's not nice, unless you get a good percentage of her price. Be prepared and be careful not to do your good deeds when there's no one watching you. If you're looking for adventure of a new and different kind, and you come across a Girl Scout who is similarly inclined, don't be nervous, don't be flustered, don't be prepared.
That's right. We all need to be prepared. That was Tom Lehrer, one of his old songs. I'm a big Tom Lehrer fan. I don't know if everybody knows that or not, but he was political and social satirist who made it through quite a few years. Some people know him as the guy that used to do all the funny songs on Sesame Street or for the Electric Company. But that was him. He's done a lot of stuff in his days. But anyways, I'm going to bring back in Ginger and Cheryl here. You're back with us here on Jumping Ship with Captain Dan. And Cheryl Lynn and Ginger from Ginger's Pet House.
Mm-hmm.
So, Well, we got the top of the hour. We've got about another 20 minutes. I got to take another break, and then after the break, I figured we'd take callers if it was all right with you guys, or if it was,
sure,
if it was all
right
with Ginger.
Mm-hmm. Well, fine with me.
Great.
There's a couple of things that I'd like to mention before we run out of time to do so,
okay,
if I may. As pet owners, in the event you would have to go to a shelter and you would have to be separated from your own pet, please be aware that service animals are permitted in the shelters to help the people that they are a service dog for. There's only two questions that shelter personnel have to ask, and this is a new law, and also after Katrina, that is the animal or is the service animal required because of a disability? And it's a yes or no answer, and then what work or tasks does the or has the animal been trained to perform? Those are the two questions that they ask people. Now, regardless of what tasks the animal performs, a person cannot say, oh, I can do that for you, so you don't need to bring the dog in here. You cannot do that. So as pet owners, we have to realize that service animals are permitted to be with their owners in shelters. So don't make a stink and say, well, they have a dog with them, and a person can do that for them.
Well,
it's not the same thing.
Well,
so,
not to mention, a service dog in a shelter is not a pretty sight. Service dogs are meant, you know, they're working dogs. They have a job to do, and they know they have a job to do. So if you try to separate a service dog from an owner who really needs her, you're likely to hear about it.
Oh, yeah.
If nothing else, the dog will become severely depressed. So it's not healthy for the dogs that way either.
Right, and a service dog that you might encounter in a shelter is not a pet. So it's not like
right.
You're missing your pet and you go, oh, can I pet your dog and all kinds of other,
no.
And hug it, and, you know, that dog is working. So I just want to caution people, you know, sometimes we get a little edgy when things aren't necessarily going our way, and maybe you've been separated from your own pet. A service dog is not a pet, and they need to be in those shelters. So don't get upset and don't give personnel a hard time. You know, just kind of roll with it.
And don't try to play